हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Tattvasandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 2, Understanding of the Jiva and the Supreme Brahman. Page 55.
Thus, no statements of oneness between the Lord and the Jiva in the Vedic scriptures should be taken as asserting absolute oneness between them.
Right? So when they're talking about oneness, they're talking about the commonalities. But it never means that they're exactly one. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're saying somebody's from one nationality or one community. So you're bringing out the oneness, but it doesn't mean they're absolutely one. Like, you know, there's one Frenchman and he happens to be here for the class. That's it. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Baladeva Vibhushana. Having confirmed the eternal nature of the highest entity, the author describes the relationship of the scriptures with Brahman possessing qualities. In the Lord's statement in Chandogya Upanishad, the word anena signifies that the jiva, atma, is different from the Lord. Here the word atma refers to the jiva who is an amsha of the supreme atma. The Lord's separated amsha, vibhin amsha, not a form like matsya, which is a swamsa. Right? So there's the difference there is the swamsa means that it's going to be Vishnu Tattva, and it's going to be a portion of Vishnu Tattva. But when we say the Vibhinamsha, or just Amsha, that's the Jivas. Right? Statements of extreme non-difference of the Jiva from the Lord and statements of opposition, e.g., you are that, indicates similarity of type only, since the jiva is a form of consciousness like the Lord. In that sense, there's a oneness of jiva with Brahman, right? Because saying you are that, then it's not that you're that different, but at the same time as you're not that, you're the same. That has to be appreciated. Footnote 19. Srila Prabhupada elaborates in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11. The absolute truth is both subject and object, and there is no qualitative difference there. As it is, like sometimes, much of the time you'll see him talked about as the object. Because we as the jivas, then he is the object of our consciousness, of our worship, and everything like that. But at the same time is that you also see times where it's talking about he's the subject. One, he's what everything is about. And that, but then also it means then when you're talking about relationship, then he's the subject and the devotee is the object. Right? Does that make sense? So depending on the context, he's both subject and object. So depending on what it is, one or the other will be used. As it is explained in the first shloka of the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, the supreme truth is self-sufficient, cognizant, and free from the illusion of relativity.
Can we say that the jiva is also can be subject and object? Of mercy.
Yeah, I mean you could say simply because, but that's because Krishna is the original subject and object, and because of that, then you could have that aspect. But it wouldn't be coming from their own. They're not independent as a subject and object, right? Because Krishna, that's the one point that's being made here. He is self-sufficient. So that's very important that Krishna himself does not require anyone or anything else for his existence. existence, his maintenance, his happiness, anything like this. Because everything is him. Because otherwise the idea is, okay, we came from this, so where did God come from? That's the whole point. That's why he's God. Because he didn't come from something. So that's an important aspect. So in that way is the context of whatever our position, just like that oneness, but it's still in the context of the Lord. Or the difference is still in the context of the Lord. Okay. So just depending upon what it is. Just like amongst ourselves, some is the subject, some is the object in that way. So the jiva in that way is both. Is that? Yeah. Cognizant means always conscious of everything. You know, it's not like we were discussing the other day that there's something that he's not in control of, not aware of, and stuff like that. And free from the illusion of relativity, right? So you can't compare him to something. It's not that it's seen in relation to something. He is the standard by which everything else is judged. In the relative world, the knower is different from the known. But in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are one and the same thing. In the relative world, the knower is the living spirit or superior energy, whereas the known is inert matter or inferior energy. Therefore, there is a duality of inferior and superior energy. Whereas in the absolute realm, both the knower and the known are of the same superior energy. There are three kinds of energies of the supreme energetic. There is no difference between the energy and energetic. But there's a difference of quality of energies, right? So they're all non-different from the Lord in that they're coming from him and his energies. But there is a qualitative difference in the energies themselves. Right? The absolute realm and the living entities are of the same superior quality, but the material nature is inferior energy. The living being in contact with inferior energy is illusioned, thinking he belongs to the inferior energy. Therefore, there is the sense of relativity in the material world. In the absolute, there is no such sense of difference between the knower and the known, and therefore everything there is absolute. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11 purport. So one always has to, we can see is that this is the point, and then this is not understood due to lack of having the, how you say, connection with the parampara. And due to that, working with mundane intelligence, then they come up with the impersonal philosophies and all these things. Right? It's all based on this point. So they see there's the duality and then there's the oneness, so they don't understand how that oneness, so they take it as absolute oneness, when it's not. Right? Yes?
For us, very easy to be attached to someone who needs us. For example,
right.
Like Bharata Maharaj was attached to the deer.
Right.
Krishna fully self-sufficient and he doesn't need anyone. What is the basis of our attachment to him? How to be attached to Krishna if he doesn't need us?
He doesn't need us, but we need him, no? No? Yeah, so that's going to happen anyway. But he doesn't need us for his existence because we are part of him. Right? So he naturally has, we naturally have a relationship. But we're energy. Energy can't function without energetic. Does that make sense?
Yeah. This point is brought out later in the Bhagavad Sandarbha.
Okay.
The Lord is self-sufficient and all blissful. Why he has to show that, mercy towards the devotees? So the Lord is self-sufficient, at the same time he is full of all auspicious qualities.
Oh, okay.
So being merciful is one of his most auspicious quality. That's why he takes care of devotees very personal. So with that we can be happy that
Lord will take care of everything. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The distinct differences are obvious. This is shown through examples. Some statements in the Upanishads speak of the Lord with amshas. So, kamayata bahushyam. The Lord desired, may I be many. There are also statements in the Upanishads showing the Lord without amshas. Satyam jnanam anantam. Brahman is eternal existence and knowledge. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1. Nishkriyam santam niravadyam niranjanam. The Lord is without parts, without action, peaceful, without fault, without contamination. Sweta Surtara Upanishad 6.19. Shrutis which describe the Lord without amshas aim at defining the object apart from its descriptive elements. They speak of Brahman without revelation of its form and qualities. Because right? You're trying to establish Brahman on its own without having to the need of us. Right? Because otherwise you have the mistake being made that then God becomes a projection of our idea. Now, you know, that's what the atheists and others, they like to say, is that we're taking ourselves and projecting that on God. Right? But you could also look at it that, you know, they don't have anything going for them and they're projecting that on God also. So the whole point is you can define him on his own without the jivas. Right? Because he stands on his own as the energetic. But he has energies. So just because they're describing him as the energetic doesn't mean he doesn't have energies. Like, just like, let's say, you're describing the man as the high court judge, it doesn't mean he doesn't have a family. It's just we're talking about him in the context of being a judge. Riti, to know the Supersoul, one must first understand the nature of the self. Thus, Srila Jiva Goswami begins explaining the characteristics of the self in the next Anucheda. Anucheda 53. If it is first concluded that Tvam, or the Jiva, is an eternal conscious entity, one can then easily conclude that Tat, the Lord, is a similar eternal conscious entity. For that reason, the Jiva is identified with the Lord. Anyartas cha para marshaha. The jiva is mentioned for another purpose, not to equate it with the Lord. Brahma Sutra 1.3.20. Remember the point before what we were saying is that we don't know the Lord, but we know the living entities in the material world. So you start comparing things connected to that of within the in the context of what we know.
Yes.
Right, because as it was mentioning in psychology, you have to move from something known and compare the unknown to something that you know, and then you can start to make that bridge. Right, that's what Anuman is doing. You're taking something you don't know what it is and saying it's like that. Right, so it's only to give an indication so that you think. So if you're thinking in that way, hearing from proper authorities and thinking in that way with that proper attitude, then the Lord will reveal himself. It's not that process itself will reveal the Lord. It's just that's the method. Does that make sense? It's just like when you eat, right? You put things in your mouth and you chew, right? But it's not the mouth and the chewing that makes it that your body assimilates. Right? Assimilation is a different thing. You understand? But it's just the process. So the process is through the spiritual master, you hear about the Supreme Lord. And then trying to analyze and see that in context of your life and your situation, you know, to in devotion, then the Lord being pleased, he reveals himself. Does that make sense? Its nature is expressed in the following. The jiva does not undergo birth, death, growth, or deterioration, since he is a seer of all conditions of changing bodies. That jiva is known alone, existing constantly in the body, but endowed with activity by the power of the senses, just as prana is one, but moves from body to body. Right? There's one prana, but it moves. From, you know, you're in this body, then the prana is there. You move to the next body, the prana goes there. That's from Bhagavatam 11.3.38. The pure jiva, atma, is not born. Na jajana. Since he is not born, he has no changes that take place after birth. He does not increase. Naidhate. Since he has no increase, there is no transformation. Since he is the seer, savana, vit, all times of various bodies with changes of infancy, youth, etc. Vyabhicharinam, right? So he sees the changes. Right? The body doesn't see the changes. So here, if he has no increase, there's no transformation. Right? So if Brahman means no transformation, and the soul is Brahman, right? And therefore has no transformation, then how does the soul transform and become the whole Brahman? You understand? It can't. So that means there's no transformation. It's always 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. Right? Does that make sense? And the Lord is always unlimited. This means that the seer of these conditions does not become the condition. Right? Just because you see it doesn't mean you become that. Yes. Right? That's the thing. That's where the duality is. Yes. So that's why we say we are not that. Or we are not this. Mm-hmm. So that's why it says you are that. Right? You're talking about the transcendental. Yes. You know, we are spirit. Yes. That's the whole thing. Yes. Well, we're not this, which is the body. Here's the duality. There's no duality. But that doesn't mean that there's not. You can't tell the difference. What is this Atma without these conditions? He is a form of knowledge alone, upalabdhi matram, existing in a body, sarvatra, at all times, shashvat. Knowledge of blue disappears and knowledge of yellow appears. Okay, so now we're getting again the Buddhists. The Buddhists say.
Previous. What is he trying to prove? Is the first one?
Means this previous one.
Yeah, not
means more, that the jiva is there, he's unchanging and all that. And so then if that's there, where is his connection?
To the body or to the world?
That's the point.
Oh.
Is that it? Does he have a commonality with the body? But he has a commonality with the Lord. So the Lord's unchanging; he's unchanging. Mm. The Lord's eternal; he's eternal. Right? The Lord is conscious; he is conscious. Mm. Right? Like that. And so this way, you know the difference between yourself and the body, and you also can understand that same principle on an unlimited platform. That's the Lord. So you're starting off self-realization with the living entity themselves. Right? Because that's our context that we know. Like right now we identify with the body. Then we have to show through the body we're not the body. You know, like that example, my hand. We don't say I hand. Right? So you're starting with the body itself, the body changing, all these things. But we still have the same perspective. So that means we're separate from the body. So we've started with what we identify ourselves, then we bring it to who we are. Then we identify the, then we show the Supreme. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, or whatever works. If they can relate to the Supreme, then you're going to start there, bring that back. So these qualities, then the jiva has these in a small amount. Right? It's like if you have a concept of the ocean, then you can understand a drop of water of the ocean has the same quality. If you don't know, then you have a drop of water. You just that's just unlimited. That's the ocean. Mm-hmm. Yes. Somebody says so. Whatever it is, by any degree, you're going to get that. But it's not something else. Okay. Now the Buddhists. You know, if morning was getting boring and all that, so just, you know. Knowledge of blue disappears and knowledge of yellow appears. With such perception, knowledge cannot be constant. Anapayi.
What's that? They have special affinity for blue and yellow knowledge?
For blue and yellow.
Goodness?
Well, yellow is supposed to be goodness, blue is ignorance, so probably blue is the... it's a prominent color there. But I know if you only see some red, I think when you're dealing, maybe with Shakti.
For them, everything is a lamp. No? Lamp is yellow.
Oh, lamp is yellow, yeah. And the wall is blue.
Blue and yellow is a Ukrainian flag.
Blue and yellow?
Yeah.
Okay, so do they have a connection back to...
Not at all.
To Tibet or something? No? No?
They have to check.
Yes. Right. So, see, because they're working on, remember, in perception, as we're talking about, is that you have the pramana chaitanya, your ability to perceive something, right? Then you're going to have the vikara chaitanya, which is then the mind transforming, taking on the qualities of whatever is perceived, right? You have the ability that you can see, right? That there has to be a power that you can see to be able to see. Then there's actually seeing. So when you see something, the mind takes on the quality of what it sees. Right? So if you're looking at something blue, it takes on the quality of blueness. If you're looking at something yellow, it takes on the quality of yellowness. Right? And so then that's different from the what we did about the Pramiti Chaitanya, is what is your feelings towards blue and yellow? That was the question that we just had. Yeah. Why blue? Why yellow? You know. Does that make sense? So, they're taking this aspect of perception and taking that specifically is the consciousness itself. No, that's consciousness is being applied in this way. But it's still something different. Right? You know, just like cooking is a principle, then you're applying it in a particular situation. But that doesn't mean that situation, because cooking means I cook something and then now that thing is gone, so therefore cooking is temporary. You understand? So that's their philosophy. They're only looking at it that far. Why? Because that's all the more they want to know. They don't want to know more than that. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. Right? It means it's just like someone will only analyze something up to the point that it proves their position. Right? After that, you don't want any more evidence. Like that. Yeah.
It's common.
Yes, it's common. It's common. That's why it says the conditioned soul has those four defects. Because they will follow that. So here, it's coming because it's not a transcendental philosophy. It will have those four defects. And depending upon the school of Buddhism, then it's more extreme or less extreme. But it's all a problem. By the strength, okay. So this is them continuing, or this is what we're saying?
This is the uttara for them.
Oh, okay. Okay, so by the uttara. By the strength of the senses, one's knowledge takes on variety. In this way, the forms of blue and yellow, arising from functions of the senses, arise and disappear. That is not knowledge. The difference, because of change of body and no change, jiva, is the first inference of the jiva and the Lord. So that's the first inference. Because they're trying to say is, since it all disappears, then therefore you can't take it beyond that to the Supreme. So that means it disappears, so there's nothing, so the Supreme must be nothing.
Yes.
So they're taking, again, using the same thing. They're taking something that they're commonly used to, like that, the colors and the perception, and then showing how that's temporary. And then saying that, therefore, you have this unlimited temporary, and that's the Supreme. Rather than you're making a distinction between matter and spirit, and then taking that and understanding the Supreme Spirit. Does that make sense? So it's just that's they're using the same techniques, but they're using it in a flawed way. That's why you have to hear from authority, right? And they're saying, so this knowledge cannot be constant, but they're saying that's not knowledge. That's just what you're perceiving. But knowledge is beyond that. The second inference is the difference between the seer and the seen. An example to give is given to show the unchanging state of the seer in changing situations, the seen. It is like prana, which is one but moves to various bodies. Does that make sense? So you have this difference. So they're trying to point it out is that they would have to say is that since knowledge, this perception that the particular perceived knowledge that they're getting, rather than knowledge itself. They're not making a distinction there. So that being temporary, then they're equating themselves with that. And then from that, that's saying that's then what the supreme is. Rather than, well, you're able to perceive that, that means you are different. Right? And being different, that's what we're talking about, that's the eternal. Mm-hmm. Is that, so they don't accept that there's a living entity, that there's a soul. Mm-hmm. So we see is that because that just doesn't have anything to do with the Vedic philosophy, right? There's just no soul. There's nothing. You know, there's this illusion in different degrees, and whether the illusion is there or not, I mean, the illusion may be, what is it? You have that four stages. That illusion may be there, and what do you call it? But it's not important, or it may or may not be there, or it's not really there, or it's just not there. Mm. Right? There's nothing. So they just take it in these stages of how much blue is there in their philosophy. Mm. Right? So that's not there. So you have to, with Shankara, he has to adjust that there is a soul. But then that soul is that unlimited. So the other one is you just extinguish and you become part of nothingness. So nothing is not there and you become part of that nothingness. The other is now you have this absolute consciousness and then you become part of that. Or you become that instead of part of that. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because even if they become nothing, they're a real small part of nothing. So in your nothingness, you're really nothing. So then it's not going to be as inspiring as that you're all nothingness. Anucheta Prakashika. The Vedic statements that establish non-difference between the Jiva and Brahman do so considering the common attributes of both. Right? You show the non... Yeah. One such popular example is Tattvam Asi, thou art that. In this statement, Tat signifies Brahman, and Tvam refers to the Jiva. If the nature of the Jiva is understood clearly, then the nature of Brahman is easily grasped. This, right, because if you understand the soul exists, then you understand Brahman. Problem is in the Buddhism, then there's nothing there, so there is no soul. And then in the Mayavad philosophy, then they'll have the soul, they know the soul is there, but it only exists in the context of illusion. Right? In other words, the soul exists, but not as an individual soul. Right? So they don't actually understand the soul, therefore they can't understand actually Brahman. Even though they're supposed to be professors of Brahman, but they're not actually, because they don't actually understand what they're dealing with. Right? They understand a part, but it's very meager, that knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you say that Buddhist and Mayavadi are the only two options if we don't take Vaishnava?
Basically, yes. It's just some degree. That's why it says Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Means that's what you're going to do. You have the Vedic, which means that you're going to accept according to the scriptures. And so then that'll get rid of your Buddhism. But then within that, if you don't accept actually the Vaishnava position, the Lord's position, then you'll end up with all the other philosophies. So all the six schools, there, that means if you're looking at it from the six schools, then you're dealing with five of them. They're all impersonal, right? Because they, even if they accept that there's a God, they're not accepting him in his completeness as a person. Right? The maximum they're going to get up to is Paramatma, or a kind of a juncture between Paramatma and Brahman kind of thing. So then they won't get to Bhagavan. So they haven't actually understood the Lord. So there will be some element of impersonalism there. Because they're just taking it as general. He's God. He's the controller. He's the He's the master, he's the creator, all these are impersonal qualities. So even though they're talking about him as a person, they're describing him as Brahman. Right? So that's the thing, it's always this kind of mix there. They're always going to have that. Then with Vyasa's philosophy, now you can't have the proper, but Shankara's then used that to defeat all the others. Because if you want to pave the way for Vaishnavism, you want to be able to get rid of all the other schools.
Yes.
So therefore, he defeats the Buddhists and he defeats Karma Mimamsa.
Yes.
Karma Mimamsa can defeat the other four schools.
Yes.
Right? So if you defeat... they say Buddhism, you defeat anything non-Vedic, and if you defeat Jaimini, you defeat anything that is Vedic. That's you know, outside of Vaishnavism, right? So he established that's then established. So it leaves the door open for the Vaishnavas, but at the same time, it's because he's dealing with Buddhists who are so far away.
Mm-hmm.
He just brings them up to the impersonal platform, just so that they come within the Vedic context.
Yes.
Right? And so now he's improperly applied Vedanta, so he can defeat the other schools. But now with the proper application of Vedanta, with the Vaishnava Acharyas, now you defeat Shankara.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's why you'll see is if you have, let's say in the modern kind of context, of studying philosophy and like these, they'll always study Shankara because that's the only one they can relate to. Because if they say, even if they're theistic, there's no philosophy in their theism. So in philosophy, they'll have to use Shankara. So that makes sense. So that's why you'll see that kind of aspect. They don't know the others. So the other schools they get rid of because... in Shankara, there's no external form, really. Right? And any form that's there, you can kind of relate to it as you know, like the monks or something like that. But the other forms, then they have external activities of religion that will conflict with Christianity. Right? And so then, those naturally they're going to, they're not going to take those. Shankara will make more sense to them. Because philosophically they're still, even though they're theistic by their religious sentiment, but in philosophy they're still basically impersonalists. So it can't be underestimated the effect of this particular view. You know, like that, and then how they're going to approach. Somebody says.
Now, can we also relate the Buddhist and Mayavadi to Karma Indian?
Well, the Mayavadis are Gyan, but the basically, as Buddhism comes up when you've rejected both karma and jnana. Means you practice karma. That then gives you knowledge and some detachment. And then you're able to see karma's not getting you what you want. So then you go practice jnana. Then from practicing that, then you see is that's also not satisfying. So in frustration, right? Because anger after frustration, then Buddhism is taken up. Hence the blue. Right? And so it's kind of rejecting both. But because the living entity, conditioned soul, can't function without religion, therefore they've accepted. Right? So therefore now what you see is the Buddhist religion and all that like that. That's all been taken. It's a mix of, you just added Tantra into it. So in other words, so what you see is that you have Bengal, then you go east. Because Buddhism originally is just, there's nothingness. And you just are discussing about how it's nothing to be convinced, and you meditate on nothing. And so their day would be they would meditate on nothing, and then they are, you know, maybe have some discussions or whatever. Then they would go out and beg, I think for an hour and a half. you know, before noon. And then having begged, they, you know, they eat, and then they spend the rest of the day in their discussions and meditation. So they would have no temple, no worship, no place. They would just be here, they're there for a while, and if it's that good, they move on. So there's there is no basically religion as such. It's so minimal that it's, but a conditioned soul can't actually follow that. So this is what Buddha did and what he was practicing. But in his lifetime, his followers, being unable to practice that, they took up, you know, whatever religious aspects from the Vedas could match with that. And so the Tantra is what they were most impressed with. They were traveling because he converted all these big Brahmins. Because, you know, it's like they're the ones, they're the scholars. So then they are preaching, and that then helped everybody become Buddhist. But when they were traveling, when they came through North Bengal, then they bumped into the Kamakshi temple up north. And they were seriously impressed with their prowess. And so they added the tantric element. That's why you see they have Shiva, Durga, and time. So they picked up these elements. And then from that, then that's become what's being practiced. Basically, you can see. So I think the Tibetan would probably be more close to it. And then as you go out in the other ones, then, you know, their own particular, by their own, you know, the cultures that are there, their own flavor and all that. So then, yeah. And then also in Bengal, then those who, you know, were here, then you had, they developed that form of Buddhism called Sahajayan. Right? You have Mahayan, Hinayan, Terayan. You also have Sahajayan. But it's only in Bengal, so probably no one else knows about it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, you know, it's like, who cares? Bengali. So,
I think these Buddhists, they were preached by Veerabhadra Prabhu, and they became devotees, and later on, there is an Upa Sampradaya started.
Then they became. Okay. Veerabhadra means Lord Nityananda's.
Nityananda's.
Oh, that's just that. Okay. So, peace. And then having become Vaishnavas, then some of them maintaining their attachments to their own philosophy created their own sampradaya, their own upa sampradaya. You know, it's just like we can see is that amongst the even within the Gaudiya, then they maintain an attachment to something. They create their own, you know, how you say, for lack of a better word, upa sampradaya. It means they do things that aren't regulated by the shastra. They do things that the shastra doesn't talk about. You know, it's like, you know, I take initiation from Prabhupada, even though he's not present, and didn't sanction that just because I want. So why Prabhupada? Why not someone else? Why not Narad Muni or something? You know, I like music, so I'm going to go for Narad Muni. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so that's it's not Vaishnava. No Vaishnava anywhere will accept this. No Acharya. So they've made it up. So it's an upa sampradaya. That aspect. They may be following the other practices are all sampradaya. And so therefore they can easily commune with those who are properly following. But in ultimate reality, until you accept properly the spiritual master, you're not going to be accepted in the spiritual world. Because you're servant of the servant of the servant. You can't just say, hey. Because otherwise they're going to take that, then it's also, why not, you know, Lalita or Vishakar or Radharani yourself? You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, is you won't be accepted in the spiritual world. You can't get there by this philosophy. Right? And then this other where you're reversing the process, and now we're the body again. You know, that becomes more important, the material identity. And so then, and then comparing things there, that, you know, the body and the body can only do, you know, so therefore, and I am the body, right? So it's a slight misunderstanding of I am that. So there's their philosophy is I am this, right? So tat is that. What's this in Sanskrit? So I guess idam tvam asi. That's their philosophy. So idam vadi. Yeah, so then they're placing it on that. And so that it becomes, it's a distraction. So it's just that they have an attachment, their own philosophy, is, as Prabhu pointed out, is coming from that Christianity. So if this doesn't apply, it means God's not applying technically in this. In other words, I have my lifestyle and whatever I want to do, but God and the acharyas and the philosophy and the culture, religion doesn't apply in it. That's inferring your deifying God and separating it from. So that deification, that's not proper philosophy. That'll make it a upasampradaya. So they separate it from God. And so now that it's separated, now I can do what I want. Right? You know, once theistic, one accepts that there's ultimately God, as long as I can do what I want. As long as he supports me doing what I want. So, you know, so it's a beginning stage. It's all right as a beginning, but you can't call it that it's sampradayic. You can't call it that it's solid. That you can't call it that this is firm faith. Right? There's some degree of faith, but that's the thing. It's dependent upon one's own mundane concepts of morality and ethics. It's not based on the transcendental concept. You understand? So it's a mixing of philosophy. So it's not actually, it's just another angle on Vaishnavism. It's just not Vaishnavism. It's an upasampradaya. Right? Because that's what upasampradaya for us means, is you're taking the proper Vaishnav understanding and then by attachment perverting it into something else. Does that make sense? You know, so the, like you said, Dharavesh is you're taking Vaishnavism and then elements of the Islam, you're mixing with that, then you get that one. And so this one, they've just taken it and mixed it with some Christianity. You know, the other, that, you know, Sahaja, and they've mixed it with Buddhism. That, you know, a particular branch, a particular aspect. So when you do that, then you end up with something else. So that's why you can see, but there's so much similarity, yes, but also that you have to be able to see the difference. So you have to be able to see the similarity and the difference. So it's similar, that's nice. You know, but with the difference, then you have to be see is that that's their process, not ours. Does that make sense? So if one's interested in pure devotion, then one has to go for the pure process that's given by those from the spiritual world. And what they're giving is what is applicable to us in our condition, because ultimately the material world is only the material world because of our perception. So as long as we think, you know, I'm a Westerner, then you are in the material world because you're perceiving it in that way. But as Krishna is explaining in 11th canto, everything is part and parcel of him. So therefore everything is Brahman. Hence, whatever you're seeing is connected with Krishna. Therefore, it follows Krishna's laws, not our laws. Right? Because he is everything. While the others know you're trying to separate it off, and Krishna's over there, and you know, that's all great for India, but I'm here, so it's different. The laws are different. Right? And so that's... It's just a convenience for their own attachment. So it's just a misunderstanding of philosophy. So you can see is that this point of knowledge of blue disappears and knowledge of yellow appears, right? With such perception, knowledge cannot be constant. Anapayi. They're taking an aspect that's bona fide, but misapplying it, right? So they could say our perception is not constant. So therefore, to make constant consciousness, we have to connect to something that is constant. And that's the Lord. Right? And then if you say, what about the material energy? If you see it in context of the Lord, that will maintain that constancy. Right? So that's just what you're doing. So it's just taking something that's bona fide and taking it off. That's where it becomes, like, sometimes if you, you know, has it come up or you've heard where in the discussion it says, yeah, but this person says one thing. This person seemingly says the opposite. They're both quoting the same verse. Like that. So then you have to being able to appreciate the fine points of the philosophy to see what is correct and what's not. Right? Does that make sense? Or they're both emphasizing different approaches and they may be bona fide for certain situations. And so they're both not wrong, but then you also have to see the situation. Right? semi-sense. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, in dealing with this time, place, and circumstance, that you have you want to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But that's done through an activity that gets results.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. You have to apply that according to the circumstance you're in, the environment you're in, and what's your relationship with that. So when we say circumstance, it means what's your relationship with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Just like, let's say, in Kurukshetra, you have all the devotees there from Vrindavan and Dwarka. Now some discussion is going on, the sages are speaking, Vyasadeva is asking questions, right? Mm-hmm. Not Vyasadeva, Vasudeva is asking questions, right? So in that, then it's appropriate,
mm-hmm.
that circumstance. So Vasudeva and his relationship to that circumstance, then it's proper,
mm-hmm.
you know? So if, you know, the sages are that, so any other points, then the little kid raises his hand and says, what time's lunch? That would be inappropriate, because in that situation, he as a child, it's not his, he could ask his parents that, but he wouldn't ask the sages. Does that make sense? So you have to see, so circumstance is not impersonal. It includes us as a person, how we relate to that situation, which also generally has people in it. But by making it impersonal, it makes it easy. Oh, time, place, circumstance, what can I do? It's separate from me. You know? Oh, so then you didn't do it. So then the results of it that did come out good are not for you. There's some, okay, great. No, wait. You know? I put in the effort. I put in the time. What about, you know? But you said you didn't do it. You know? Yeah. So we have to see is that when we're dealing with here, it's like it says, Krishna deals with thinking. Right, feeling and willing then is done through his expansions.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have the aspect is Icha, his desire. He has the desire. Then the mechanics of that fulfilling that desire, and the environments in which it is those mechanics are applied to fulfill the desire. That's taken care of by the jnana and kriya shaktis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So we always have to see is that we are able to function in these environments by our understanding of the proper philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as long as we stick to exactly what the acharyas have given us,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes easy. Even if we don't understand the technical points so much,
mm-hmm.
we just do what they do, it'll work.
Yes.
And if you're going to apply it wider than the direct example or something that they gave, the situation maybe have some adjustment. You have to know the principles on which it's dealing to be able to make those adjustments.
Yes.
Yes.
We see that devotees, especially not very beginners, but a little after, they try to study Shastra, analyze, and because they don't have neither the experience nor enough knowledge, they are taken astray. They don't understand this. They don't know how to reconcile the apparent contradictions.
Yes, that's why. Okay, go ahead.
So the question is, how to see the level of a person? How much they should analyze on their own? How much they should ask people? How much they, you know, what's the balance?
Yes. Because the point is that you're studying and you're trying to see it in the context of what else has already been said. So it's not that something that Prabhupada says here in a purport that we've never read before, that it therefore changes everything else that's there. Everything else remains in place. So it's just a matter of how that reconciles into that. But it has to keep everything else in place. And that's why we're always associating with those who are more advanced than ourselves, because then we discuss these things and get their view and all that. So this idea that we'll just do it ourselves, that's not recommended. Because we will come up with something strange. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. Yes.
The point nowadays when we say, you know, Bhagavad Gita as it is, or follow as it is given, then people think it's a boring idea. It's like nothing happening. We have to adjust. We have to
edit. But adjust what?
Whatever's given, we have to with it.
Yeah, but and how are you going to play with what, and what are you going to get from that play?
Experience. Everybody's looking for experience.
You can take a hammer and hit yourself on the head. It gives an experience. So you're not doing that now. Have you ever done? Have you ever hit yourself on the head with a hammer? No. So then why you're wasting your time? Do something different. You're just doing the same old boring thing. You know? And then not only that, you go into that hardware shop. There are so many varieties of hammers. You know? You can really have a lot of variety there, you know? You know, all the way from that, you know, 2.5 kilo hammer down to that little one for tacks, you know, like that, and you know, and anything in between, you know, the ball peen, the one with the, you know, the claw hammer, and you know, you got all kinds of stuff like that. You got those, you know, with the wooden handle and the big rubber mallets, you know. There's so many things you can get. You also have even those ones that you know, like the what do you call it? The doctors use with that. It's the metal with the little triangle for hitting your knee and see, like that. You can try that. You can go for it, you know. Why you're wasting your time? Why you're holding yourself back from your true potential here, you know? So the whole thing is as soon as they start saying that, then they have to explain themselves, because otherwise they're using words, but do they have any responsibility for the words they're using? That's the whole point. They're just using them, following another, I mean, so what's happening here, they're spontaneously following a mundane path. And so you'll use any words that follow that path of that particular experience. You know, because they're trying to, oh yes, you know, this whole, yeah, everybody. There's an experience there. So you're going to use words that generate that. And if you use words that don't go along with that, that's where they get upset. That they have to define what you're saying. Okay, you're saying it's the same old thing, but you know, it's breathing, that's the same old thing. You know, so I mean, that goes back. You know, I mean, even in modern science, you know, billions of years. You know, when are you going to move on? You know, and then this eating, you know, stuff, then sleeping. You know, it's like a mating, like that. That seems to be getting more and more popular. So shouldn't that's so old? You know, this is even. You know, so like that, it's that all it is that it's that they don't want anybody telling them what to do. It's not a matter of new and fresh and that, because if you follow them around for 3 days, you'll see they always do the same stuff. They talk about doing something different, but they'll always do the same different. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, we don't go to, you know, McDonald's, we go to this little place over here, but they always go to that little place over there. Unless they find another one of those little places. So they'll only go to those kind of little places. You know? Oh, we don't shop in those boutiques. We shop, and then they'll always shop in those places. You know what I'm saying? So it's they're doing exactly the same thing, and they're boring. But the whole point is they're doing it because they feel it's their independence. And the problem is now Gita's telling them that they're not independent. They have their consciousness and they have their choice at every moment on what they want to do with it. But how consciousness works, how the material energy works, the laws that are there, that's not created by them. Otherwise, why is it they always drive on, you know, let's say if you're not in the Commonwealth, on the right side of the road? You know, why don't we mix things up a bit? Drive down the middle. They do in India. Hey, come on. You know?
Walk in the middle.
Huh?
Walk in the middle.
Yeah, walk in the middle. I used to walk in the middle. Like when you get across and you don't get quite across, and then you stay in the middle. Then you go like that.
The cows in the middle.
Huh?
The cows
are in the middle. Yeah, yeah. They've got it worked out. Yeah, it's all happening in the middle, see? India's about the middle path. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that let them define what they're saying. Let them take responsibility for what they're saying. It's nice that they're talking and thinking and trying to apply it, because they're thinking this doesn't apply to me. So that means the thought process is working. But the reasons that they're saying it doesn't apply to them isn't actually very glorious. Because it just means someone's telling you what to do and you want to do what you want to do. So that means the only reason you do things is because you're forced. And then if we remove that, then, you know, we'll just have Mad Max or something. You know? And so then there is no community, though they're going to talk about community. You know? Or if they're the person who's just independent and this and that and just doing their own thing, then that's nice. Then they're more on the detachment, so you catch them more by the knowledge side. And the ones that are talking about the others, then this is more about the karma side. You know, does that make sense? If they're talking about freedom, you go with knowledge. If they're talking about equity and fraternity, you go with karma. Okay. If the spiritual nature of the jiva is understood clearly, then the nature of Brahman is easily grasped. Right? Because we're going from that point, as he's making the point, is that you're preaching to the jiva. So you have to talk in relationship that the jiva is going to understand. Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, if it's very clear the jiva's nature, then you can understand the Supreme. So you may be talking about the Supreme and how you're connected with that, or however it is, so that the vantage point will be the jiva. That's where you're going to start. Then as you introduce, then it comes up. So this technique of similarity has also been used in Vedanta Sutra 1.3.20. Anyartas cha paramarshaha. The reference has a different object. Right? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Pipalayana Yogendra instructs King Nimi to educate him about the nature of the Lord. The purpose of the verse by Pipalayana is to distinguish the self from the body. The body undergoes six types of changes. These are listed in the Niruktam 1.1.2. Jayate sti vardhate, vipari namate, apakshiyate, nasyati cha. The body takes birth, exists after birth, grows, undergoes transformations by aging, dwindles, and finally dies. So that means then your couch potato, they take birth and exist after birth. They don't grow. They only transform by aging, dwindle, and then die. So the growing part, that's the problem there. Right? The soul, however, does not undergo any of these changes. Krishna explains this in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. It is said that if jiva is understood as atma, paramatma can be easily understood. For that purpose, the author gives quotations while describing the jiva. Right? So you point out how the jiva is different from the body because we think we're the same. So now, and then you show how we're similar to the Lord, and then you can see the Lord. Then you take it to where you can see the difference. Therefore, you have that relationship. Right? So you're just reversing what we're already doing. Right? We see our similarity with the material energy. So we're identifying there, but at the same time a difference so we can interact. So we have to break that and create that identity with the Supreme and then that difference with the Supreme so that we relate to the Supreme on the transcendental platform and the difference, then we interact with the Supreme. Does that make sense? So you're shifting what we're doing here of seeing everything as, you know, non-different and different with material nature. Right? So that means if Achinta Veda Veda Tattva is the highest there, that means it's the lowest on the material platform. Right? So they're seeing themselves the most that they're the same and the most that they're different. Right? So the person who is so convinced that they're the body, but their body is unique to all other bodies, now you have found yourself the grossest materialist. Right, and as soon as we say this, immediately you must have in your mind, you can see that person. Yes. Right? You know, whether you've met one or it's just a cliche from you know, something else. But the point is you can see it, and you understand they're the most grossest materialist. So you have to break that. First is you're not the body. So there's that difference you have to apply is, yes, you're already used to, I'm not him, I'm unique, but you're not the body. Yeah. Right? And then that commonality, instead of the commonality of material nature, is commonality of the spiritual, with the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right? And then once you see there, then you can appreciate the spiritual difference. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise, as long as you see difference as material like this, then there's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we may appreciate the difference in the spiritual, but then we may not make a distinction between what's matter and spirit. We'll take those as the same. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, that's why then the spiritual understandings, you can tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. But now if we have a lot of resistance.
Yes, there's a lot of resistance. But I think you're supposed to say that with the more stronger French accents.
Vive la résistance.
Yes, that's the thing. That's what we're doing. You know, that's the sutra. You know, we were saying the Maya Sutra. So that's what Prabhu was bringing up, is that that's the resistance. We're hearing about Gita and the resistance because there's an opposition to authority. Mm-hmm. So there has to be acceptance of authority. You know, and once that's accepted, then people deal. So that's why then you'll explain the philosophy and that in the context of that individual and what they value and everything like that. So once they see it in the context of what they value, now it becomes useful to them. Because now they don't see it in their context. So for them, anything that's authority is controlling, is restricting, they don't like it. So they avoid it. But once you show that you already have values and you're restricting your life and controlling your life by your values, it's just that these are higher values. So it's something that you can do. Why? Because you're the soul. Mm-hmm. Right? Because as long as we're the body, then yes, you have to have the mundane variety. Because what we're professing is that the mundane variety isn't our focus. Not that we don't have variety, but it's not our main focus. Right? It's the spiritual, is that oneness with the spiritual and the spiritual variety. That's what's prominent. And so that being prominent, then we have to not be as enthralled or distracted by the material variety. And when that comes up, that we're not so distracted by material variety, then we can appreciate that devotional service is not boring. Right? Because they're equating material world is boring. Yes. Anything you do, no matter how nice it is, you can only do it so many times before you get bored. Yes. Right? Yes. So they're projecting that onto Krishna consciousness, right? Onto the philosophy. Yes. So you have to understand, no, spiritual is not like that. So that's the thing, is you have to show the difference. You have to show spiritual is different from material. Therefore, you won't get that boring. You know, it's just like, you have your favorite song, or you know, have that particular line from your favorite song, or your favorite, you know, line from some quotation. You can say it over and over again. Yes. But could you sit down and chant that all day? You know, and then every day in, day out. But we're doing that with the Maha Mantra, and it's not getting boring. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that the heads have to understand there's a context that it's not boring. So then we're willing to adjust, because having values means you restrict your life according to a value. Yes. Right? Does that make sense? And so the higher the value, then the higher the consciousness, the higher the effect, the greater, wider range of living entities it applies to. But it also means the greater the restriction. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that by restriction, then that's where you get more. Just like, let's say, I'm cooking.
Now let's say I have a range of spices that I use. You know, spices, condiments, whatever it is. Every prep, I put all of those into that prep. So, yes, it'll work and it'll taste nice, but there won't be much variety. Now, if you have a more sophisticated system where you can relate to, okay, that, you know, a singular spice or a simple combination of less spices will produce a particular taste, if I apply that, I'll get a completely different flavor in that same preparation. Right? And then I use a different, you know, singular combination, I'll get a very different flavor. Does that make sense? You know, then you get the most variety. You know, it's like I came across that the other day. It's one Italian was making the comment that generally, though, outside of Italy, when they cook Italian, whatever is nice from Italian, they put it all in one prep. So it's always the same. But for them, they said actually Italian cooking is very simple. Mm-hmm. You know, you just put a few ingredients to it. But then you move it over and you change the ingredients. And so it's within the context, but you get such different preparations. Right? Does that make sense? Even though basically they're always using the same thing. They don't have a wide range of spices there. But certain things, they just put certain ones and this and that. And so it works. You know, it's like in music. You only have seven notes, but you get so many melodies. So if it's understood is that the more you're able, refined means there's less happening. There's no extra. So the whole idea of sadhana bhakti is that practicing just what you actually require, not more. So that's why then Prabhupada says being comfortable or being satisfied means it's what you have, that's enough. Don't go less, but don't go more. So for today, what's required, that's what you do. But after some time, it may not be that. Like for the brahmachari, his half a bucket of halava is more than that, it'll be too much, and he'll be making complaints the next morning. Less than that, he'll feel it was a major mistake, yes. Yeah, he could starve to death before he wakes up in the morning. Right? So that's what it has. But if you keep doing that, then after a while, you'll see, then he'll start eating a quarter of a bucket. Like that. And then, you know, it'll just naturally adjust. So that's the thing, is that it has to be understood, is everyone's restricting themselves anyway. You say, oh, I'm so different, but you're restricting yourself to be always different. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. There's a big connection between restriction and freedom. Restriction and freedom.
Restriction and freedom. Yeah, means if you're able, means the person who can restrict themselves appropriately, they're free. Mm. And the person who can't restrict themselves claims they have freedom, but they're not. Mm. You know? Because freedom is a good concept, but then the difficulty comes is that it's not actually understood what is freedom. Mm. You know, it's just like, let's say, for example, depending on how you're looking at it, let's say one's a brahmachari. So then one's living in the ashram. There's so many rules, so many restrictions, and that he doesn't define what he's doing really. So you could say is there's no freedom. Right? Now if he left the ashram and he got married, then those restrictions aren't there, then in one's mind that's freedom.
Yes.
But there's other ways you could look at it that it will be the opposite. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's just a matter of being so the ultimate thing is being freed from the influence of the modes of nature. Being freed to act actually is the soul. Mm-hmm. That's freedom, because in the material nature you say I'm different, but that's because the modes of nature have made you different. Right? You've had the interest, and by the modes you are different. Yes, but it's simply the modes. So when you engage those in Krishna's service, right now you're actually different.
Because everybody else, like Prabhupada, I mean, told Guru Kripa Maharaj, just says, another face in the crowd. You know, everybody out there thinks, you know, that they're doing their own unique thing, but they're all doing the same thing. You know, it's all about their family, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's what they're doing. Nothing different. Just because it's nothing unique in the way of that is beyond that. It may be, you know, what they eat and all that's different. But certainly so. Yes.
I was thinking, and this is a very important point, because even for devotees, it's not obvious when we read CC Adhya Lila externally, really nothing happens. So what's this all about? It's a complete different mood.
Yeah.
But we don't catch it, because yeah. Too gross.
Yeah.
Too gross.
Too gross. Like that. That's the problem. Too gross. So it's about tasting. Right, because the ultimate point is that there's no taste from our knowledge, our endeavor and results, then what's the point? Because that's the solid thing for us. As mentioned, the Vedic psychology, that's what's concrete for us. We organize our lives according to the concrete experiences that we have, either positive or negative. If they're negative, we'll organize it to avoid those things. If, you know, just like, let's say one has bad relations, so then you organize that you have no relations. But there's a concrete thing, and that if you push on it, it'll go back to, you know, some particular example or examples. And that's what's concrete. Even though around them, everything is different, they're not experiencing it that way. For them, it's abstract. But someone else, they're finding that there's nice relationships. So that's concrete to them. So the experiential is actually what the soul is looking for, and that's what rasa is. But it's just that we're used to this experiential in connection with the senses and material nature, not connected to Krishna. And so then it becomes the point is that we're trying to switch that from that experience to the transcendental. So as one gets purified, then you'll see the Antya Lila, that's where it is. And it ends with the Shikshastika. You know. So it's kind of like it ends where we began. The difference is now the taste, the appreciation, the realization is there from that. Yeah, so we have 3 years. Yes.
Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, a person who is free from attachment and aversion and controls the senses by regulative principles of freedom,
yes,
attains the mercy of the Lord. And when he attains that mercy, he is no more affected by threefold miseries.
But Krishna uses that regulative principles of freedom, because we're taking it that regulative principles that it's not freedom. It's just a matter of these are free because you're free from the material world. See, because otherwise, if it's just we're being free generically, that's impersonalism. Because the point is that we're saying, oh, but we're regulated and all that, we're controlled by others. But it's just a matter of what's the problem being controlled by others? It's a matter of who you're controlled by. Right? So that's the whole thing. So does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the thing. Krishna is that right person. He is Mr. Right. Right? And so then being controlled by him and his devotees, then that's fine. So this thing of I don't want to be controlled, that's impersonalist, because I don't want to be controlled by relationships here, I don't want to be controlled by relationships there. So my freedom is impersonalism. Well, the actual point of freedom is you're not controlled by the modes of nature. Then you're actually free. Otherwise, you say you're free, but then you have to follow the modes that define your particular conditioning. So that freedom that you say you always have to do that. You're not free to not do that. Like you're the rolling stone that you just are never in one place. You're controlled by you always have to not be in one place. you know, not be in one place, can't have any relationships. As soon as a relationship starts to develop, you leave. You know, like that. So they're controlled by that. Though they say, I'm free. So that's it. Yeah?
I'm thinking rolling stone in Sanskrit means sannyas.
Yeah.
Always moving.
Yeah. Yeah, so the mind's fixed, the body's moving. Others, the body's fixed, the mind's moving. So something's rolling.
Always.
Always, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.